last 5 years.
Completely wasted the two best talents in baseball.
Scary.
And it was a scene in Miami last night. The man that was calling it on MLB Network is Mike Farron, and he joins us now. How you doing, Mike?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
Doing very well. Obviously, as O just said, I mean, it really set up beautifully. It could have been a blowout for Japan, a blowout for the U.S. It could have been, you know, any combination of teams. It could have been Ohtani coming in the fifth or the seventh. It worked out beautifully, though, with Ohtani on the mound, 3-2 game, Trout up at the plate. Like, the atmosphere in the building, what was it like calling that? What was it like witnessing it and just the magic, the theater of it all coming together?
I mean, I'm going to say, first and foremost, I feel so fortunate to have been in the building last night. You know, one of the keys, I think, to doing great radio broadcasts for baseball is being on site and in ballparks and being able to feed off the emotions of what's happening in the stadium, in addition to being able to have the access that is afforded us. You know, as I told you, we get a little added benefit even when clubhouses are closed to be able to talk to some people ahead of the game. So all of that was huge. You know, I think back to those times when I had to do radio games off of monitors and how difficult it was and how I wouldn't be able to answer the question the same way, because for me, this experience of doing the entire WBC was incredible. And the atmosphere in the ballpark did not disappoint. Really, the 5 nights in Miami all told were sensational. Initially, it was a little different because there was not one of the Latin American teams playing, but you got senses of what it was like to be in a game with Team Japan. You know, one of the things I had heard about them in pool play was that when Japan is pitching, this is from the announcers who were in the ballpark, that there was it was very quiet, right? And so in the first couple of innings, it was kind of eerily quiet, especially when you consider that, like, the Venezuela-U.S. game was 3.5 hours of noise, like just constant noise, right? So that was kind of cool. And then, obviously, U.S. crowds are kind of more conditioned to when something good is about to happen or when there's a big moment, you stand up and cheer, and so you have that. But the intensity, the atmosphere, all of it, and when you started to figure out about the seventh inning that, hey, there's a chance that this is going to finish with Trout and Ohtani facing each other in the ninth, I mean, that just drove it home. It was the perfect cap to what was a really remarkable 2 weeks of baseball.
Mike, we were just talking about the Angels and watching those two superstars, as you just mentioned, Ohtani and Trout. Like, if you've been involved with the Angels in the last 5 years, you must look at that and say, how disappointing for the organization not to get that club. And I understand that they're the players and they were a part of it, but for them to not be involved in big games in the playoffs, it's got to be so disappointing.
Sure. I think everybody involved in that organization would tell you that. I think that's something that, you know, Perry Manassian's in his 3rd year as the general manager there. I think that's something that he obviously feels because I think he understands the importance of it. But I think an event like this is bigger than what we have in Major League Baseball. And I think what you're talking about is seeing two superstars, two of the maybe the 5 best players ever. I mean, Babe Ruth wishes he could have done the stuff that Ohtani's doing, right? Like, he wasn't a two-way player the same amount of time that Ohtani was. Trout's probably the best all-around player since Willie Mays. Like, you're talking about those two guys going head-to-head for their countries. That's a little bit different beast. And so, yeah, I think absolutely the Angels are probably part of you going, man, it would be so great to see these guys in the postseason. But for what this did for baseball internationally and for what this moment was by itself, I think this was really, really special that we were able to see it.
We're chatting with Mike Farron. He called the game for MLB Network last night. Japan getting past the U.S. 3-2 at the World Baseball Classic Final. And the buildup of it, you mentioned by the seventh inning, you could start to do the math and kind of see where it was going. Mm-hmm. And then when Ohtani comes out, you realize, all right, you know, Mookie hits into the double play. It's Trout, do or die. He's got to get a hit to stay alive or at least walk. It worked. It was perfect theater. But then when you actually watch the at-bat, like, Trout is, you know, one of the all-time greats. And the old saying, you know, the greatest of all time fails 7 times out of 10. He wasn't even close, man. Like, Ohtani, and it's not about dragging Trout. I think what was symbolized last night was the greatness of Ohtani. Like,
he 100 mile an hour fastball.
He's challenging him. Like, he's blowing it past him. Yeah. And that slider, that was a violently ill slider to punch him out. That third strike was disgusting. And like,
I think
that,
somebody said that it had 18 inches of movement on it, which is like one inch further than the plate. So, right? So think about that. That started inner third for Trout. And like, you're expecting 100, right? You see it coming out of the hand, you're thinking it's a fastball. And he's got a fastball swing on it, and the next thing you know, it's in the left-handed batter's box, right? But to your point, like, 100 miles an hour from Ohtani in Trout's wheelhouse was the 1-0 pitch. Trout's one of the greatest low-ball hitters ever, right? And there was a pitch that was just below the 5, middle of the plate, at like 101. I think it was the 1-0 pitch that he swung through. And that was so cool in watching Ohtani challenge him with that. That was neat. And a couple of the takes that Trout had were very confident, right? Look at the first pitch breaking ball. He got a slider on the first pitch. And he had a real confident take, like, yep, I got that. I mean, like, if you really go back and look through the way that both of those guys acted in that at bat, it was terrific drama. It was two guys who were locked the heck in and ready and knew. I mean, they knew what the moment meant. They didn't have to be told. And I'm sure Trout was counting outs, too. And I'm sure Ohtani was counting batters as well and trying to figure out if this was going to happen because they knew this is what everybody wanted before the tournament. I mean, it's like it's a one-in-a-million shot almost that we got.
Yeah.
Well, do you think that the Major League Baseball can carry this built momentum into the season and maybe capitalize on it?
Well, I hope so. I mean, I think there's certainly buzz surrounding it, right? It almost stinks we can't start the season tomorrow.
Right.
That we have another week of spring training. But, my hope is with that and with, you know, probably some casual fans that were watching it internationally who had a chance to see the excitement of it, that they can get behind some of the rule changes and the quicker tempo that should be coming between pitches this year and seeing if maybe they're interested in staying involved. This is something that I do know as a fact. So we talked about it on the broadcast last night. So I don't know if you guys remember the 2009 World Baseball Classic, but Darvish actually closed out their win over South Korea. And a number of the Japanese pitchers are in their early 20s. And they said they remember being in elementary and grade school watching that happen. And that was a big moment for them, right? So one, first of all, thinking that 2009 was far enough away from this moment that there are guys that are pitching who are in elementary school now was a really difficult pill to swallow for me because it meant that I am really old. But the other part of it is, like, how many of those players are in that spot? How many players were watching Trey Turner, you know, the other night? Or watching, like, even going back to pool play, right? Like, watching Otto Lopez, you know, and watching Team C in the matchup against Colombia, right? Who saw these moments, who got into baseball or got a little bit of the itch that they now want to take forward into the regular season. I think that's something that I'm excited to see. I don't know where that goes. I don't know how that works in North America compared to Japan. But I do think it's interesting to think that, you know, that there were probably some lifelong fans that were made over the course of this event because of the intensity of it, because of the star power, because of the quality of play.
Well, it was an incredible finish and an incredible build-up. And like you mentioned, the crowds in Miami, it was all you could ask for out of an event. And they've committed to it. They will continue to commit to it. And we look forward to the next one. He is Mike Farron of MLB Network Radio. He was calling it last night. Great job. Really appreciate you taking time. And we'll do this again down the road. Thank you, Mike.
All right, guys. Take care.
There he is, Mike Farron.
Was that a great job last night or great job?
Just in general.
Hit?
No, yeah, I thought great job with the hit. I thought it was great job with the hit.
Oh, I thought it was kind of. I thought it was kind of like your Nazem Kadri thing, where it's like, stay fit,
stay. Well, is that what he said? Stay fit.
He did.
Stay active. Like, I said. Stay active. That was, and I thought that was an important message. Right? It was during COVID early on. I don't know what Naz was doing.
Should have said that to him this off season.
Yes, after signing that big deal, I don't know how active he was after that.
Exactly. I'll tell you what, that Ohtani man, like he's. He's the kind of athlete and player where if you're the casual kind of Toronto Jays fan, he could almost make you buy the MLB package in the nights that he's pitching out west. Like, just tune in. Like, he's that He's that guy.
Yes, I agree. Yeah. That's what it was about last night. Like Trout is an all-time great. Trout is a beast, and Trout has been so dialed in during that tournament, and he'll have a great season. If he's healthy, he's going to be one of the five best players in the game. But that was the Ohtani show. Like, Ohtani won the MVP for the team that won. He was the best batter, is the best pitcher. Like, this stat has been going around, you know, online everywhere, that Mike Trout has had 6,174 career MLB plate appearances. So over 6,000 times he's come to the plate. Only 24 times has he swung and missed three times for strikes. That's what happened last night. That's how great Ohtani is.
That's a great stat.
It's an incredible stat.
That's
like,
unbelievable.
That's, you can't fool Mike Trout three times. You can strike him out, but he's going to foul off a pitch. He didn't even make contact last night. Did not make contact. Just three swings, three misses. And, I mean, that's all you need to know about this cat, Ohtani, is the guy can hit 40 bombs and pitch like that. It is something we've never seen before.
Yeah. But they're teammates, too, which what's crazy, you should know each other's, like, tendencies. Like, he should know Ohtani inside and out and vice versa, but Ohtani got the best of him.
I don't think it matters, Noodles. That's the thing. If the guy's throwing 101 on the paint and then throwing a slider that moves as much as that slider moved, it doesn't matter if you know it's coming. Like, that was like a Wild Thing versus Parkman last night in Major League. Like, if you can hit it, you can name it, and Trout could not hit it. And Ohtani's deal is up after this year. Buster Olney of ESPN was on First Up this morning. Let's hear what he had to say. Listen to this number he throws out about how much Ohtani possibly could sign for.
The question at that point is the offer that he signs start with the number 5 or start with the number 6? $500 million plus, $600 million plus. I think it's going to be $600 million plus because there's nobody else in baseball that can do what he can do, that can replicate his production, replicate his marketability. We're going to be talking about him through the trade deadline. We're going to be talking about him going into the offseason and all the way through free agency. Mets, Dodgers, maybe the Yankees, maybe the Mariners, and the Angels trying to keep him. He's going to have enormous bidding for the best player in the world.
Wow. $600 million. That's if you do the math, he's talking a 12-year deal, you're talking $50 million a year.
What if somebody just says, screw it, we'll give you $1 billion?
That's what I was thinking. Like
how far away are we from that? Like, just give him $1 billion.
Well, when you were building that story up, when you were building that, you know, hey, this sound clip, I'm like, is it $1 billion? Like I that's all I could think about.
Do you think a player in our lifetime will sign for $1 billion?
Yes.
Dude, when you have a special talent like that that's off the charts, I don't know how far we would be away from it, but
okay, so
you would have to think an organization like the Jays, maybe the Yankees, the Giants out in San Francisco, they would probably sit in a boardroom saying, should we just offer this guy $1 billion? Now, is it worth it to us to bring this cat in for $1 billion?
$1 billion is Dr. Evil type negotiation.
I know, but define, okay, so define sport, because wasn't Ronaldo just sniffing around that?
Yeah, but that was for like $250 million or something, and not that that's something to sneeze at, but and not nearly as many years.
But that's what I'm saying. If a guy goes, I'll sign a lifetime contract, and let's say 15 years from now, so in our lifetime, hopefully, knock on wood for all of us, like 20 years from now, like salaries are going to continue to escalate, everything, inflation, all of that. Like I could see somebody being a $75 million player, $100 million player season. So you sign a 10 or 12-year deal at that type, like that's $1 billion.
Could you imagine trying to work out a salary cap sheet with a guy making $100 million?
Well, dude, Hayes, if he came to the Jays, let's say he came to the Jays, what is it worth having that guy playing ball down the street?
A fortune. The amount of tickets, the amount of merchandise, what you get out of the Japanese market is where the real money's at, because that cat is the biggest thing.
He's a god.
He is absolutely massive over there. And it's a huge country. It's a country that loves sports, loves baseball, loves Ohtani. So if you're the Jays, you know, there's Jays jerseys all over Japan. You know, you'd be selling them everywhere. I can't monetize it. I can't tell you exactly what it would be. But if it hits 600, like forget a billion. It's not going to be $1 billion, but 600 is a landmark. Like That's wild money, man. $600 million. Imagine signing a contract with $600 million on it.
He's going to.
He's going to. And I'm telling you, in our lifetime, we are going to see salaries continue to escalate and get out of control. But, I mean, that's where these sports are going.
If the owners are going to pay.
Exactly.
Yeah, and the owners are making money, right? Like, all these franchises are being sold for $2, $3, $4 billion.
Exactly.
That's going to keep going up for sure. Dave Pullen, in about 20 minutes, Jerry's percentages. I wonder how Jerry would feel about someone signing for $1 billion in the NHL. He's coming up at 5:30. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 2.